Hey, let's start the show.
It's November 7th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, directly to my left, Norman Chan. How are you doing, sir?
Busy.
It is going to be a short show today. We're getting ready to get on aeroplanes and fly out of the city.
Aeroplane over the sky.
Aeroplane
over the sea.
Yeah. Did you see the two planes that crashed full of skydivers?
I saw the video from the NBC Nightly News video, exclusive. It was terrifying.
It was the scariest thing I've ever seen. Everybody survived, and they landed the plane.
They were small planes.
That doesn't make it any less scary, man.
The only reason everyone survived was because of the very special circumstance of both those planes being planes for skydivers, and most of the people on those planes, skydivers ready to jump on normal skydiving.
So it's a best case mid-air plane crash scenario, basically.
Yes, and we're not talking about planes colliding into each other. We're talking about one high up above the other and then kind of falling onto the other one, kind of a top-down collision.
To be clear, that is still a collision.
It is absolutely a collision. The planes didn't explode. The wings did fly off. The first-person camera footage from the skydivers. I mean, once the planes were collided, the skydivers who were on the edge ready to jump, they're just knocked off and...
Yeah, those people were clear and were like, what the hell happened? And the drogue chutes were out. And they just did a normal skydiving thing.
And then the pilots, unfortunately, had to eject.
But, they didn't have ejection seats. They got out of the front seat and jumped out of the back of the plane, right? I didn't realize that pilots in skydiving planes wore parachutes so that they could jump out too. But I guess maybe there were some spares in there and they had time to strap them on or whatever.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
It's still not as terrifying as... in World War II, when the gunners on the pilots on the big
the ball turrets
and the flying fortresses were in these little turrets, and they had no parachutes at all. It was a very tightly compacted space where basically nothing shielding them between them and the outside world except some glass.
Or plexi, maybe.
Plexiglass.
I don't even know if they had plexi back then.
Heavy glass. Yeah. And if the plane was hit, they had to climb out of the turret, then find a parachute, and then jump out of a plane. And that was an unlikely scenario.
And even then, the ball turrets, like, they were all hydraulic, so they had to rotate back around. And if the hydraulics were out in the plane, then they had to manually crank the thing around. It was terrifying. Have you ever read any of those books from the guys who were... B-25 or B-17 crew. There's two good ones. Stephen Ambrose has one that's about wrote a book that's about.
That's the guy who wrote Band of Brothers.
He wrote Band of Brothers. He wrote I don't know if it's the definitive, but it's the most interesting book about D-Day that I've read. He also wrote let's see, what is it? There's a book about the Battle of Britain, or maybe it's the B-17 fighter bomber crews. And then there's also one about the B-25 bomber crews, which is what Catch-22, the Joseph Heller novel, is about, is the guys who flew B-25s out of Italy, I guess.
I read that in World War II, parachutes were not standard issue. Remember World War I, parachutes were not standard issue for a lot of pilots and planes. And
I don't think they were reliable then.
And I don't know if it's apocryphal, but there's a theory that without the parachutes, you had the fight to the bitter end, and that would encourage your fighting.
I don't know if that's the case, but I mean, I think that the invention of the static line parachute drop, which I assume happened during World War II, maybe it happened in between, but that let mobile infantry, air infantry happen, because then you could take people that basically didn't know how to parachute. They jumped out. The end of the parachute was hooked on a cord that was still in the airplane. When they reached a certain distance from the plane, they dropped in a very precise, predictable way which is how they were able to drop the guys behind enemy lines on D-Day, as depicted in Band of Brothers and a bunch of other stuff. I'm looking at the list of Stephen Ambrose books. He wrote a ton of books. I think the one I'm thinking about is The Wild Blue, though, which is about the guys who flew B-24s from Italy to Germany. So it's all of his World War II books are great. I haven't read a whole of the other stuff. I read Undaunted Courage, which is about Lewis and Clark coming across the virgin western forest. Anyway, got a bunch of news this week. We're going to run through it pretty quick. This is in no particular order. We're not going to lead with the big story. Amazon, this is crazy. If you are an indie bookseller and you would like to sell Kindles in your bookstore, then Amazon is giving you 10% of all ebook sales from those Kindles in the first 2 years. Now think about this.
Mm-hmm.
You're an indie bookseller. You are selling books independently. You have relationships with distributors, but you're probably also selling a fair chunk of used books. So your Powell books or something like that, or any number of smaller booksellers.
Sure.
Why on earth would you ever sell Kindles in your bookstore? I mean, 10% of the take is something that you probably wouldn't get otherwise, but 10% doesn't seem like very much, and it's only for 2 years. So what's your angle in saying, hey, our customers, you can get books in a much more convenient, easier, more accessible way than driving downtown to our store and trading cash for fungible goods.
You're saying it's like a TV store selling computers, or
it's, remember when Barnes and Noble, when Amazon was Barnes and Noble's front end for books, when you went to barnesandnoble.com and it was actually just Amazon with a Barnes and Noble skin on it? It's like that.
I think it's because there's a lot of, there's Amazon's, the deal now where if you buy a physical book, you can get the ebook.
Matchbook. That doesn't really, that applies to a very small number of books. And I don't think that that's affiliated. So if you buy a book from the independent bookseller, you don't get an ebook version of it.
I think there's nothing wrong with encouraging people to read. And I think people who are going to support small bookstores are going to continue supporting them.
It's possible. Okay. The Microsoft CEO shortlist has escaped Microsoft's confines. There are apparently several internal candidates, including Tony Bates, who is...
How big is the shortlist?
It seems like it's 7 to 10 people.
Okay.
4 of them are known. The rest are unknown.
Known as in leaked, or
we know who the people... that's a good question. The stories that I read about this said that it listed very definitively 4 candidates as being on the shortlist, and then also said that there were several other internal candidates. So Alan Mulally, who's the CEO of Ford and is a turnaround expert, is one of the candidates. Stephen Elop, who left Microsoft to go run Nokia as a kind of Manchurian candidate, and now has sold Nokia back to Microsoft, is presumably one of the other candidates. The Skype CEO, Tony Bates, who, you know, Skype was bought by Microsoft, so he's an internal, kind of external candidate. And Satya Nadella, who ran the cloud division and was responsible for Azure and all that stuff, is one of the other listed candidates. And then the articles I read cited 3 more internal candidates.
3 more internal ones.
Internal candidates, as well as possibly some other external candidates we don't know about. So the process is moving along. It's been whittled down from hundreds of people to 10 or so.
What is this new information? What does it mean?
I don't have any idea.
Okay. Does it signify, like, give you an idea of Microsoft's direction, choice? Like, what are they looking for? Is it bode well?
So a few weeks ago, there was a story about members of the board urging Bill Gates to step down as chairman of the board to make way for a new generation of Microsoft. It seems like that's not probably the case. The inclusion of Mulally seems to be...
Bill Gates has a promising career as a magazine editor.
What?
He's the guest editor for this month's issue of Wired magazine.
Oh, really? Is it out yet?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
Is it good?
Just the cover.
Would you read the magazine?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're going to read it on the plane tomorrow? Maybe. Maybe not. Okay. So Mullally, who knows why Mullally is he turned around Ford. So he my assumption is that he's a candidate to kind of calm the members of the board who want a turnaround. The irony, of course, is Microsoft makes a boatload of money every quarter still. So they're, you know, it's still a very successful company. It's not like they're in the state Ford was when Mullally started in 2000.
But not making a lot of money on in the areas that they want to be competitive in.
They're making money in the areas that they have been competitive in for the last 30 years, not the areas that Apple and Google and other companies
are. If the existing Ford CEO who turned around Ford and has the one Ford policy, if the Ford CEO became Microsoft CEO, do you think that CEO would focus more on enterprise and get out of?
I have no idea. I mean, what do you think? Ford has made their business in the last 5 years on consumer cars, right? Pickup trucks and Sables, Tauruses. So,
I don't know what the
direction is. Do you think Ford's tried to be hip?
I think Ford, along with Chevy, have both tried to be hip. Have tried to modernize their.
I think you're dramatically overestimating the. The purchasing power of people who buy stuff from people who are trying to be hip. Because, I mean, if you look at millennials as a purchasing group, they don't have money because there's no jobs.
It's a lot of scions.
Yeah. Ford Focus, man. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means. I think that ELOP, you know, none of these people, I mean, Skype, Tony Bates sold Skype for a boatload of money to Microsoft, which is, I guess, successful for investors. I don't think anybody looks at Skype and says this is a product that we want to emulate. It's a legacy product that has millions of users that they've managed not to lose in the same way that AOL lost millions of users with AIM. I think actually Nadella who did Azure has probably the most successful forward-looking product. I don't think they're making a ton of money with it yet, but I think they're in a position where they actually could in the future. As people are moving more of their hosting services and stuff online, but that's a pure enterprise business. That's not a consumer business at all. And I think that Microsoft, you know, Bates isn't a consumer CEO. ELOP has tried desperately to build consumer products with the Nokia stuff, and it hasn't gone anywhere. So I don't know who the consumer CEO is. I don't know that Mullally is the guy that does that. But maybe he comes in and cleans house and starts over. I don't know. Google announced the Nexus 5 late last week after we recorded the podcast last week. It's a 5-inch phone. If they keep going with this, then in 3 or 4 years, we'll see the Nexus 9, which is a 9-inch phone. It'll be larger than their small tablets. I don't understand.
I think it's a reasonable size.
I think 5 inches is not a bad. How big is your phone?
4.7.
Yeah, I mean.
And that's 4.9.
A little bit bigger is not bad, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do large phones.
The Nexus 6 is not going to be a 6-inch phone.
They will not do a phone larger than 5 inches.
Okay.
They're not going to do a Galaxy Note.
The Snapdragon, it's a Snapdragon 800 with the Adreno 300, so it's comparable to a lot of other Android phones. 8-megapixel camera, 1920 by 1080 screen. It starts at $350 for the 16-gig version off contract.
Which is stupid cheap.
It's very cheap when you're compared to other on-contract phones that are comparably equipped. And it goes up to $400 for the 32-gig version. They pushed a lot of stuff on the they were pushing. It was a very Apple-y push on the. If you go to the Nexus 5 page on Google site, you see low light pictures and HDR photos that look great. And
I mean, why is that an Apple-y push? Was that a good phone?
It's
push?
A lot of focus on experience. No, well, I mean, a lot of the other stuff that we've seen from Google on the Nexus phones, especially, has been. Kind of silly stuff like, hey, you can log in with your face. And it seems like they're actually pushing
that
things
was like
that
people 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's fair.
That wasn't Nexus 4.
That was the Galaxy Nexus 2 years ago.
Galaxy Nexus is 3 years old.
So what was the 2 year old phone?
They did Galaxy Nexus and then it was a long time before they did Nexus 4.
It was December to December for Galaxy Nexus to Nexus 4, wasn't it?
No. Galaxy Nexus, there was a huge, huge gap.
Okay. Anyway, the point is, they're pushing stuff that people actually use. That's what I noticed when I was looking at the page.
It's stuff that you use as an Apple user.
Do you take photos
with
your phone?
Absolutely. I think that
would
they,
you like
they,
to take better pictures
they thought,
with your phone?
They thought that the face thing would be people thinking someone use, and now they're just doing things that
really?
People... Yeah,
do you
absolutely.
Really think that people thought face login is something I'll use?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Is it still in the phone?
I don't use it.
Okay. The interesting thing about it is it's the first KitKat phone, I think. I mean, that's obviously it's the Nexus phone for this year. It's the first phone with KitKat. They're actually rolling exclusive stuff to the Nexus. Typically, the Nexus 5 has been the bare bones phone, the stock Android phone. This one actually has stuff that's only going to be available on the Nexus 5. A couple of home screen integrations. So the OK Google to search from the home screen and the integration of Google Now directly in the home screen are exclusive to Nexus 5, at least for now. They're a little unclear about when that stuff changes. But I thought that was interesting. It's a big change. The KitKat info that came out is you know, one of the main things is that it's a lighter version of Android that'll be suitable for less expensive phones in the developing world.
You mean lighter, meaning
lighter, less memory usage, less CPU utilization required, which presumably means it'll be faster and better on the high-end phones that that we're buying here.
If the KitKat is designed for 512 megabytes of RAM, and Nexus 5 comes with 2 gigs of RAM, then
presumably you get something for that.
I think the Nexus 5 gets less than what something like a smartwatch would get using KitKat, which I think what KitKat is
it's for is, more is bracing devices. Itself for. Yeah. I like that they added a full screen mode finally to Android. I didn't realize that it didn't have this, but they showed like Google Play Books running a completely full screen, no time notification bar, no home button, back button on the bottom. The phone app they actually showed as being smarter. I thought this was nice. When you get a call from someone that's not in your contact list, it Googles the number.
Oh.
And it pops up and tells you if it's a business.
It Googles number? Googling a phone number just never worked.
For businesses, it always works.
Do businesses have different syntax for the phone? Oh, because
it's on their Yelp page or their Google business page. Yeah. Assuming that it's coming from the external facing number and it's not a center switchboard or something like that. Okay. The other thing is that they prioritize the people on your phone list based on who you talk to most frequently on the phone.
That's in the current one.
Really?
Yeah. When I go to my phone list, it's like my mom.
Did you put it there by yourself?
No. It's there are two slots in the phone.
I think this is the favorite stuff, not the recent.
No, not recent. Like when I go to a phone list,
uh-huh.
It's my mom, me, and you, and Frank.
All the people you talk to on the phone.
Yep.
Okay.
Frequently called.
Well, this was listed on the What's New in KitKat page.
It's not new.
Then they're just putting, hey, guys, guess what? We have a web browser in here.
Yeah. You know what's nice, though, and this is something that was in Jelly Bean before, is that when you type someone's in the dialer, if you're typing a phone number in, you can just use the T9.
You can type in their name.
And you can start typing in their name, and it will show up the name.
That's been there since, like, Android 2-something.
Yeah, that is something I wish Apple had, which they don't.
So that's pretty much it. The KitKat stuff, like the iOS 7 update, it's kind of, you know, it's more nice stuff. It seems like most of the big changes that are coming to Android these days are in the... Oh, they're also updating Google Now to be even more functional in KitKat going forward. So you'll get the ability to search within other apps, which seemed like the big thing. So if you search for a restaurant in Google Now, instead of taking you to OpenTable's webpage when you click make a reservation, if you have OpenTable installed, it will take you to the OpenTable app page for that restaurant. Like this is the phones are getting smarter and better. Google also updated the iOS version of the Google app, so now it can send notifications and reminders. So you can set geofenced reminders on the iOS version of Google Now using your voice. You can also have the phone notify you if your next appointment is going to be affected by traffic, getting to your next appointment or something like that's going to be affected by traffic, or if your morning commute will be affected by bad traffic. So that stuff's good. What do you think about the Nexus 5 getting phone-specific stuff?
On the software side, I think it's a little weird, but I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a bigger deal that LG made both Nexus 4 and 5. And a lot of people, I mean, the 5 had been leaked so far in advance that it was no big surprise. It's basically the LG G2. Mm-hmm. And I think some people were expecting maybe that Motorola would get their turn this year. But Moto X is so separate now.
Yeah, I mean, Moto X is clearly a standalone product. It's not core Android.
So if you said you wanted to buy a Google phone, then you have a lot of options.
You could get the Galaxy S4 Google Edition,
Play Editions for a bunch of different phones. You can get the Moto X, which has unique features, and you can get Nexus 5.
I mean, it's good in a lot of ways. I love that the Play Editions work. I hope that they keep doing that because that's what we were asking for. I mean, is no-skin versions of the good hardware. And I'd much rather have an HTC One. I mean, assuming I'm much more interested in HTC or Samsung-built phone than an LG-built phone at this point, I think. Depends on the phone. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You have a Nexus 5 coming. It should be here shortly, right?
Tomorrow morning.
Comcast rolled out an HBO plus internet plan. This is really interesting. So no TV. It comes with like 10 local channels, which I think is probably just because they can't turn those off. It's $39 a month. You pay $10 more if you want HD versions, which is a total ripoff.
So
$50
a month.
It's a 20 megabit down, 7 megabit up.
That's pretty standard plan, for
which
Comcast.
Is like their basic, not the cheap version. It's the one that the default. And you get access to local channels, HBO, HBO Go, and you get StreamPix too, which is their streaming.
Oh, yeah, that Comcast is a fair price. Service. And is that the pricing on 2-year contract?
Oh, of course. I think that's a 1-year contract, and then it goes up after the first year to $60 a month plus the $10 plus the other stuff. So I think that that's a good deal for people who want to cut the cable. And if it's like
cut Comcast, one cable.
Well, I mean, the cable's still coming in, but at least you don't have a cable box. The interesting thing about it is that with Comcast, I think you'll be able to call at the end of the year and say, I'm going to kill my plan, and they'll continue your
pricing is you switch to a different person's name in the house.
Well, if you have
new customer,
if you're living in a tenement, that works. But for most single family homes, that doesn't work so well.
If you have at least one person, you can swap off indefinitely.
That's true.
Because new customer is only defined as if you don't have
within
if you
the
have
last
not,
12 months,
2 months.
Oh. That is a good tip. I didn't know. I thought they were trickier about it than that. Comcast also announced released the Xfinity TV Go app, which if you are a Comcast subscriber, you can watch live TV over Wi-Fi from anywhere in the world.
Okay.
That's pretty cool on your phone, tablet, or other device.
There is no other HBO-only plan. Does this mean that we'll see HBO-only plans for other type of TV providers or internet providers?
I think this is Comcast's way of heading off HBO from saying, hey, you can sign up for HBO for $20 a month or $10 a month.
And the $10 goes straight to HBO. So HBO, it's to keep HBO happy. And when Comcast is losing is their ESPN money.
Comcast loses their ESPN money, their Disney money, their Food Network money, all that stuff. So it's also, I think, probably a warning shot at the other networks to say, hey, guys, look, you're not the one that we need. It's a little bit weird because you would think if they're going to do this for HBO, then you'd be able to do the same thing for other channels and get a more a la carte plan. Maybe this is the first step in that. Because why not Cinemax? HBO and Cinemax are the same company, aren't they?
Are they?
It's the same back. As HBO Go and Cinemax Go are the same app, just with different skins.
I don't know. I don't pay for Cinemax.
Yeah, neither do I. But I think it's also to keep people from doing the thing where one person signs up for HBO and you all share the HBO login.
Is that HBO login, or is it more restrictive if you're doing on the Comcast HBO only plan?
I can't imagine. I assume it's the same thing. They didn't say that in their press release. But they did specifically mention it includes HBO Go functionality. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you're watching – if all you watch is scripted TV or broadcast TV, you don't watch live stuff like news or sports, HBO is the part of that that's hard to get. The rest of it you can get from iTunes or Hulu or some combination of those five different services, Netflix. If you're willing to pay for a couple of TV shows on Apple TV, you know, on Apple TV or Amazon Instant type service per show – then HBO Go, then the addition of HBO Go lets you get things like Game of Thrones and Veep and all that stuff, like the day that it comes out, rather than waiting 6 months for it to pop up on iTunes, if it ever does.
Are you watching anything on HBO?
Watch Veep and Game of Thrones.
You're just watching backlog stuff.
Well, I mean, when it's live again, we'll watch it live again.
So right now, in the current three months,
I could turn off HBO every 3 months and turn it back on for one month.
That is the big fear. That's the real HBO. That's the real a la carte. I don't think content is a la carte until you're paying for the content you want to watch.
There's a fair amount of research that says that if the price is relatively low, if you're looking at $10 to $15 a month, people won't turn it on and off at will.
Oh, it's, I mean, that's why Netflix, once they get people to pay
$8 a month, nobody thinks about
it. To try for Orange is the New Black or try for House of Cards, then they
it's easier to keep paying $8 than to turn it off.
You know what you're still paying for that you probably don't need?
What?
iTunes Match.
I am not still paying for iTunes Match. I turned that off in April when it renewed.
$25 a year.
I am paying for extra space for my for Gina's backups on her iPhone because she uses cloud backup, which is another $25 a year or something like that. Blockbuster, done. The last 300 locations are shutting down.
Where were they?
I assume in places where they have bad internet. So, you know, Montana, Idaho, I don't know. They are closing the stores. Yeah, that's it. They're gone.
That is the end of an era.
It is. You know,
when was the last big chain that closed that had this, that you felt this impact?
Is Kmart closed?
No, Kmart's still well around. Circuit City?
Circuit City was a big closure.
Because Circuit City had all its buildings look like a certain thing, like the red plug.
There's still a couple of those around.
Red wall wart, except it was an earth wart.
Yeah.
Circuit City was one big wart for earth.
On the face of America.
On the face of America. And all the Circuit Cities, now you know they're still there.
When Circuit City...
You know where they were.
When Circuit City closed, did you go get any stuff? Because they had crazy sales when they shut those places down.
Yeah.
I went into the one on Van Ness, and they had... probably 3,000 Guitar Hero 2 instruments, like the wired, maybe it was Guitar Hero 3, I can't remember, but a Guitar Hero instruments for Plastic Music Games. It was before the Plastic Music instrument crash happened, but there were literally, like, there was a 30-foot shelf, 5 feet high, stacked with them, and they were selling them for like $10 each. Didn't buy any.
Nope. Good Guys, I guess, was the one before Circuit City.
Good Guys was tiny compared to Circuit City, though.
I like the Good Guys.
What's next? Best Buy?
No, Best Buy will be around for a while. I guess a while is relative. Best Buy's business model is not dead yet. Not the same way that Blockbuster's was or is still.
Target is doing a iPad trade-in right now.
Okay.
If you have an old first-gen iPad...
I do.
They're giving you $200 to spend at Target in exchange for any of those. That's the floor price if it works.
Wait, the floor price?
The floor price is $200 trade-in.
Do you get more if it's higher capacity?
I think it's more if it's a newer generation, but it may be more if it's a higher capacity. I'm not sure.
You know, capacity means nothing.
Capacity is valueless, yeah.
Unless it's Apple, in which capacity is pure profit.
Well, right, $100 versus $35 for everyone else. The higher capacity ones, I don't know what the deal is on higher capacity or if you have 3G
versions.
That's
a great deal.
But yeah, since
if you have an iPad 1 right now.
Yeah, the highest version of iOS you can put on is iOS 5.
If you have an iPad, if you have an iPad 1, you should sell it immediately to Target.
Uh-huh.
And use that $200 to buy iPad mini.
Or a Nexus 7 or anything else, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
The good news... There were lines when they turned that on, so I don't know how long that lasts. I think it's like a 2-week promotion, but yeah, that's it.
Do you know that I think Walmart was doing offers for the iPad Air launch, and if you walk in the store, it's $20 cheaper than what iPad or what Apple was selling, but Apple would also do price matching.
With the Walmart ones?
With the Walmart price. So if you walk in an Apple store and I don't know if it was opening first day of sales last Friday or if it's still ongoing, but if you show them the Walmart price, you would get $20 off your iPad Air purchase.
Wow, that's a good deal.
That is a good deal, and I think that shows that demand for iPad Air maybe not so high.
Yeah, so you bought an iPad Air last week. Actually, let's play some music, and then we'll talk about what we're testing, unless you have other news you want to get to.
No.
So you bought an iPad Air last Friday. Did you get up early, do anything special?
Nope.
You just walked into the store, opened?
No, nope.
Really?
Like 3 hours after they opened.
Wow. So then did you have like limited selection? You had to get a big one or like a weird color?
Yes. I said, which ones you have? They said, every single one.
Wow.
I said, I want that one. and then walked out.
Which one did
30
you get?
Seconds later. White 32.
Okay.
And that's it.
How is it?
To evaluate how is it, you have to establish the context in which I've been using it.
And how do you use an iPad, Norm?
I use it to read, I use it to browse the web, and I use it to not even, I don't even use it for mail anymore. I don't use an iPad for mail.
Use your phone for
mail.
I
use my phone for mail or a real computer for mail. I actually don't like, I mean, Gmail is so much better on iOS than the mail client. I really don't like iOS 7's mail client.
I don't like the mail. The Gmail app is much better, but there are some pretty substantial problems with it.
And the last iPad I had was the 3, and it is, yes, lighter than the 3.
The 3 was the first generation Retina, right?
First generation Retina.
Okay.
But my feeling right now, as of right now, and I'm not sure if that's going to change, is that if I didn't have to buy the Air to evaluate, I would not have spent that money on the Air. The 3 is still sufficient.
Yeah, I mean,
battery life on the 3 is excellent. I invested heavily in the 3. I mean, I bought a 64 gig version with 3G, and that's like, you know, iPad started $500 with LTE. iPad started $500, but when you go up to 64 gigs with LTE, that's a $1,000 investment. And there's no, and if you're going to buy a new Air and upgrade from anything like a 3 or a 4, you wouldn't want to go down in specs in capacity or not have the LTE if it's something you use, and there's no reason I would spend another $1,000 on an iPad a year and a half later.
Right. I mean, it's Gina's at the same, Gina walked and I walked through the whole thing because I was going to get her an Air for Christmas to replace her third gen, and she's like, you know what? I actually like, my third gen's fine. It's a little bit big and it's a little bit heavy, but the screen's not much better than on the new one, and she doesn't do anything that requires a faster CPU. So, there you go. And she always uses it in two-handed uses. So she has it on her lap or she's holding it like a book or something like that. I'm really interested to see how the mini Retina is when that comes, but we still don't know what the release date on that is. How is it? Have you used photo editing stuff? Have you noticed the CPU speed?
iPhoto is a lot faster, but I never really liked iPhoto for minute tweaks. I don't think Touch is a great photo editing interface.
Well, and you're using Lightroom now, so there's no easy path for photos from the iPad to the Lightroom.
I've stopped importing my photos into the iPad because it doesn't handle distribution raw and JPEGs well.
And how about web browsing, stuff like that?
Yeah, not even noticeably faster.
Are you using Safari or Chrome?
Safari. Not noticeably faster. Battery life, I think, is almost exactly the same as the last one. I know Anand did a test where he, using LTE, got 24 hours of battery on LTE.
Jesus.
I mean, just as a hotspot.
Yeah.
So I know a lot. And my recommendation was this for last year. If you're on, if you have a phone that, if you're on iOS.
Yes.
And you pay for data service with Verizon or AT&T, don't pay the extra $10 a month for tethering, because you're going to kill your phone's battery. You should buy something like the iPad and get the other provider. So you're total coverage on either AT&T or Verizon, and then pay the $20 a month or whatever for that.
You pay a lot more for that, though. It's really expensive because it's like $10 for me to.
That was before their shared
the big family plan
stuff. I don't know if Verizon still has that $20 a month for 1 gig. But using the iPad as the LTE hotspot makes a lot more sense than buying a puck.
There was actually a lawsuit about the iPad, the Verizon iPad pricing. So there's an AT&T. Let's see. There's an unlimited data iPad data lawsuit. And if you were tricked into buying an iPad in 2010. Only to have AT&T switch its unlimited data plans to usage-based pricing, then you get $40 back. And if you were affected, you should have probably already gotten an email. I got one the other day because I had 3G iPads in 2010. It was kind of underwhelming. I used it for a couple hours before you set it up for yourself and just sat and read a book.
I think it's only underwhelming because, I mean, I have no doubt, and nothing from my usage has proven otherwise, that it's not the quote-unquote best iPad yet, full-size iPad yet, meaning that if you had the option for same price between for buying the 4 or the Air, There's no reason you would buy the four over the air,
right?
Or three over an air. But if you have any iPad,
if you have any Retina iPad,
then you shouldn't buy this. If you have the iPad 2, then we'll see.
Hopefully,
I have not determined whether it's worth it yet. Yeah,
I can't imagine it wouldn't be worth it since we felt that the iPad.
Well, who knows? That money could better be spent on the Retina or the Mini.
Mini, that's true. The Mini is the big question. I'm mainly interested in battery life in the Mini to see where it ends up. I spent some time with the Kindle Fire HDX. I used it for about a month, and it's a really nice little tablet. But I don't understand who it's really for.
It's for people who need those pixels, because they're packing 1920 by 1200 into a tablet that's the size of the Nexus 7.
I just don't understand who buys that much stuff from Amazon and loves Amazon that much that isn't going to just buy a Nexus 7 instead.
Amazon employees?
Okay. That Amazon employees probably have to use a Kindle Fire. That makes sense.
Great for them.
But, I mean, since those applications are available on other platforms, I don't know why you wouldn't just go buy whatever tablet you want, and then put the Nexus, the Amazon Cloud Player, and Amazon Kindle app.
Amazon's kind of screwed by the Nexus 7.
Instant. Why is that?
Well, because the whole premise behind the Kindle Fire was that it was a cheap tablet.
Yes.
A super cheap tablet to get more tablets in the hands of more people. But while that was a great plan 2 years ago, it's unnecessary now.
In a world of $239 Nexus 7s.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing that Amazon does have going for them is that the upsell storage version is a little bit cheaper than the Nexus is. So I think they only charge $40 instead of $50 for the additional space. But
I also don't like the silk caching.
Did you use it?
Yeah, do not like the silk caching.
I didn't find it as bad on this version as it has been on any of the previous ones.
It's jarring to scroll down the page and then suddenly have it re-render again once it actually gets to the
page. I didn't get that on the HDX.
You can tell.
You have to go real fast. Like in normal use, I didn't see it. If I was scrolling to make it happen, I could make it happen.
The text is lighter when it's cached, and when it's not cached, text is darker.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's Kindle Fire HDX. You probably shouldn't buy that. If you have somebody who really – the free time stuff is kind of neat, but I feel a little weird about ceding control of what the kids watch and play with and read to Amazon. I feel like that's a parent job. But maybe I'm not out of the ordinary there.
The Kindle Fire HDX is for kids, what as a tablet, what the iPad is to an adult as a computer. It is a simplified way to get just what they need. If you gave a kid a Nexus 7, like when I say a kid, I mean like a 5-year-old,
okay,
or 4-year-old, a Nexus 7, I bet they would have a more difficult time getting to the content they wanted than if you gave them the Kindle Fire HDX.
That's true. The Kindle Fire HDX is like it just shows the content up front. You look at the picture of it. You know what you want.
That's a big carousel.
You can get to Cat in the Hat really easily.
Kids know how carousels work.
You know, we were talking about this yesterday, and I wonder – I'd be interested to hear what people think about it in the audience. But why is it that an iPad or a Kindle Fire, for that matter – adding a cellular modem to a Kindle Fire and iPad adds $120 or $130 worth of cost.
Pure profit.
Versus a phone, the difference between an iPhone 5S, or let's say an iPhone 5C, since that's the same processor, and a iPod Touch 5th generation is like $350, $400.
Because they've priced the profit low on the base model to get people in the door.
If $99 on a contract?
On the tablet. If Apple really had it their way, and in the real world, if you look at the entire spectrum of iPads,
yeah,
iPads cost $600, $700.
So what you're saying is that the margin goes up with the 32
and those are the ones that are really selling. And the $500 price, even though it sounds high, it's low compared in Apple's books because they make so little.
Their margin is low on the $500 one.
And they are a high margin company.
So what you're saying is because you're paying to go from the 16 gigs of storage that goes between the 16 and 32 gig version costs Apple $2 and they charge $100 more for it.
Yep, same with the memory.
And then the 32 gig one, that's what I'm talking about. The 32 gig one is another 32 gigs, which is another $4. But they charge another $100 for it. So you're paying $200 for $10 of material.
Yeah, basically. Okay. And the $500 price is just to say, oh, the iPad's $500. you remember how what a big deal that was?
Well, back then, flash storage was expensive. Like the fact that the upsell on the different iPads is still $100 is bananas.
That's how they keep their margins high.
Okay, that makes sense. Because nobody buys this. You can't. The 16 gig version of the iOS stuff is hard to use at this point because the apps have gotten so big, especially if you're downloading games and shit like that.
I mean, even the Surface starts at 32.
Yeah. I bought a book I want to talk about.
Okay.
There's this thing. It's you know how when you go to the library and you check out a book and sometimes people have written in the margins. And some, when I was a kid, I was annoyed by that because I thought, oh, somebody's ruined this book. But when I was in college...
Why don't you get new books, Will?
Well, you go to the library.
Library. It's part of the library experience.
Or when I was in college, I was buying textbooks. I was buying used books because they were $30 cheaper.
You could do that?
Yeah, you could buy used books when I was in college. Do they not let people do that now?
They change the books every year.
Oh, no. They only changed maybe 4 or 5 years when I was in college.
Yeah, it's changed. And even like the digital books now, they're finding ways to not let kids resell them.
Really?
Yep.
Well, digital books, I understand why they wouldn't let them resell them. They're digital. They have DRM. They're fucked. But they change. I can't believe that the professors are on board with changing the paper books every year. Seems like it'd be a big pain in the ass for them, too, because they have to redo their lesson shit.
When I say change, it's changed like paragraphs. They add a paragraph or two, and so everything is shifted, and so you can't say on this page.
So you can't use page numbers. Oh, that's so sleazy. Okay, so I bought a book called S. It is by J.J. Abrams and Doug Dorst. Doug Dorst is a lit professor.
Conceived of.
He is the creator. J.J. Abrams is the creator. Doug Dorst is like I said, I think he's a literature professor someplace. The book is called S, but the book inside the book is called Ship of Theseus. And it's a final novel. I'm reading the Amazon page now because it's difficult to explain. It's the final novel by a prolific enigmatic writer named V.M. Straka. The interesting thing about the book is it's a created artifact. So you are buying – when you open the book, there's things blown into the pages every 10 or 15 pages. There are a
– You mean like physical objects
there are
slotted
physical,
in?
There are printouts. There are like mimeograph-looking pages. There's a decoder. There's postcards. There's newspaper cutouts.
As if you borrowed this book from a library that didn't clean out its books.
It is a created artifact, and also every page has a ton of shit written in the margins.
Annotations that look like look real.
They look like handwriting. And the interesting thing about the handwriting and the annotations is that they are a conversation between two different people that tells another story outside of the book. So there's a story, then there's another story, and it's almost like a puzzle box in book form.
Do they sell the book without any of the annotations so you can just read the book for its merits as a book?
No, I do not believe so.
That's a wasted opportunity. Is this the book that had the trailer, the mysterious trailer of the dude walking out of water with his lips sewn tight?
I don't think so.
That was J.J. Abrams.
That was
Bad
another
robot thing.
A J.J. Abrams joint. I don't see. You know what? There is a video here. Let's see. I'm gonna mute it. I'll just play in the background. No, this looks like. Does it start with a Bad Robot logo?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's S.
It's
yes.
S. Yeah. Oh yeah. This is it. It starts with the lips sewn shut. So. I'm usually a really fast reader. It is an incredibly dense experience.
Can you even read it?
Yeah. So what I've been doing is when I flip a new page, I start by reading the annotations. The annotations typically point to a specific thing. Sometimes they're an aside in the larger conversation between the two people.
Wait, so you're reading for the meta story?
I'm reading both. I'm reading both at the same time. It's hella confusing. Mm. It's like reading. Did you ever read the Dave Eggers book, Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius? That's really about the footnotes more than the book. It's like that time, but instead of having the footnotes actually serve the story, this is just an enormous. Like it's you're reading between the lines of the conversation. The conversation is between an older grad student and someone who seems to be like a 20-year-old undergrad. One's male, one's female.
I think they did this in Lost. There was a fictional author and a fictional book. I want to say it was Lost. That there's a meta story for. This seems like it's very J.J. Abrams.
But you're coming into the book, and the book is about an author who's been well studied and well read, and you're having to put that part together too from the notes that they're leaving in the side notes talking about them, and the supplemental materials are frequently about that. So some of them, like there's like a code wheel in there that uses compass points to decode something that's actually a plot point from one of the other novels. There's an article that references one of the people that's writing the footnotes. And you're looking at and the whole thing looks like a library book. It's like a cloth bound book with the stamps in the back. It's a really, really like it's just a really neat thing. It's unlike anything I've seen before.
In Lost, there was a fictional book that was in the show called Bad Twin, and then they released it as a real novel.
Oh, as the thing. I'm not sure. Like I've been really careful about it because I figure that the inserts are placed in specific places for very specific reasons. Typically, they'll reference something and then the insert shows up a couple pages later. I don't know. I don't understand how they could have possibly made this and sold it for $20. Also,
it's $21 on Amazon.
It's $21 on Amazon,
and it has only gone down in price.
I paid $28 for it a week and a half ago.
Wow.
So. I don't know if that means it's doing really well or really badly, but there's only 26 reviews on Amazon, so I have to assume that means it's probably not doing that well.
It's 5 stars. It's probably a book that you can buy now, and then it will be very expensive later.
Yeah, it comes sealed. It has a little seal on that. So it comes in a box. The book slides in to hold all the stuff in, and then there's a little paper that goes around the edge that I'm using as a bookmark.
You should buy two of these and keep one as a memento.
Exactly. Just if you're into books for... And it's interesting just because of the production value on it. The pages are all weathered in a really specific way so that it looks like an old book. It kind of even smells like an old book. I'm not exactly sure how they did that. But that's S by J.J. Abrams and Doug Dorse. Doug Dorse is an author of other things as well. That's what I – anything else you've been testing, Norm? I don't have anything else on the list for you.
Still got the Surface 2.
Do you want to talk about that? Should we talk about it? Now's the time. The video is going to go up next week. Norm, do you like this is the ARM based version of the Surface?
I would say that going on a flight later today, mm-hmm. I had the choice between bringing the iPad Air, the Surface, or the MacBook Air.
Yeah,
and I'm just going to bring the MacBook Air. I'm not even going to bring the iPad Air. Less stuff to carry.
Yeah. It's for me, it often comes down to power bricks. How many power bricks do I want to carry? Do I want to carry the one for the laptop? Or am I going to carry the one for the laptop and the iPad or whatever? So,
it's because I can do real work on the MacBook.
Is there anything? I know we shot the video the other day, but is there anything about the Surface that it's the best at?
It is the best at being a $450 computer that you can type on and do use Google Docs on.
And it's good at Google Docs.
That it's totally good at Google Docs.
That's something. Okay.
And SkyDrive.
Anything else before we roll on and take a question?
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do.
Emails?
No.
Questions.
Boom. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Please keep your questions short, and you can send audio or written questions. Our question this week comes from Zymantis. He says, "Hey guys, I was planning to buy a new TV set next year, and I was waiting to see if OLED TVs were priced reasonably. If they weren't, I figured I'd buy a Panasonic plasma, but the recent announcement that Panasonic is killing their plasma production has left me feeling like I'm gambling on OLED prices. Should I just buy a Panasonic plasma now while I can, or will current gen plasmas be enough for the life of this TV?"
You should just buy a plasma now.
They're good.
Plasmas are great. And even though Panasonic's no longer making plasmas, they're filling warranties, and there are plenty of local places that will fulfill warranties.
And we'll be able to fix them indefinitely.
For the next five years, at least. Should not spend money on OLED television.
They're going to be crazy expensive compared to the plasmas. And they're not going to come in large sizes either.
Most people shouldn't spend – you shouldn't spend a lot of money on your TV. You should get the best TV that you need. But there's a lot better places to spend your money.
Like, what's your sweet spot for TV? Like $1,000 to $1,500?
It depends on the size.
Well, okay, so say you want a 50-inch TV to fit in your living room in a normal American living room.
$1,500.
$1,000 to $1,500 seems right.
If you want to go, if it's like a 42-inch TV, you don't want to spend more. A really nice one, like $800.
And the thing is, a lot of people get stuck on things like the number of HDMI ports and stuff like that. You can pair a $200 receiver or a $50 HDMI switch to turn one HDMI port into as many HDMI ports as you need.
Spend more money on the monitor you have on your computer.
If you're a computer guy. So that's it. That's the question. The only knock against plasma is that they do use a little bit more power than comparable LCDs. I can watch the – I put a power meter on mine, which was a horrible mistake. I immediately wished I hadn't done that. And that'll do it for us this week. Norm, you got to go get on a plane. I will see you guys tomorrow. This week's outro is the same as last week's. It comes from Madden Man. See you guys next week.
It's a busy week. If you're listening to this on Thursday, Adam's doing Reddit AMA on Friday. So please look out for that. And
it's Friday morning at 11 Pacific, right?
11 Pacific, Friday morning, and we'll actually be doing it here. So you can send us messages if you have questions to ask, but use the Reddit thread for that. There'll be something on the site about that. And also, Adam's interviewing Chris Hadfield at NASA Ames on Friday night. If you have a question for Chris Hadfield that you might want passed along, post it in the comments, both YouTube and on Untested.
Yeah, that'll do it for us today. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Put it wildly out of context to make it sound like lunatics.
So fresh.
Clean.
Yeah.
And done twice.
That's something you would test with
an enormous battery.
Were they not great?
That's it.